Welcome to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.
Welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where the Indians are wrapping up a homestand with a series against the Toronto Blue Jays, a series that concludes on Sunday afternoon at 1:10 against the Jays. Coming up on this week's show, as always, we take a look at the week gone by, the ups and downs, the turn of the calendar to May, which the Indians are hoping is a good deal for them, as they had a rough April, finishing 7-14 in the month of April. But May got off to a great start on Friday night with a fine win over the Blue Jays. 9-4 was the final on Friday night. In addition to our look at the week gone by, we'll visit with Carter Hawkins, get the farm update. We'll talk AA Akron this week with Carter, the Indians' director of player development. We will also hear from Pat Tabler, a member of the Toronto Blue Jays television crew, but more importantly, a former Cleveland Indian who was a part of the 1987 Indians who succumbed to the supposed Sports Illustrated cover jinx, and he can relate to what this year's team might be going through, and he debunks the thought that there is a jinx because you're on a certain magazine cover, and he truly believes that the Indians at some point in time will get back in the race here this season and play some good baseball. We saw it on Friday night, certainly, so Pat will fill us in on that. It was a fun interview with him. We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll also hear from Danny Salazar and Roberto Perez and have much more as well as we get rolling with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to be back home for a Tribe Talk after a couple of weeks on the road, and the Indians in the midst of a homestand that sees them taking on the Toronto Blue Jays this weekend. And this series will wrap up on Sunday afternoon, and then the Indians hit the road for just a brief road swing with three in Kansas City before coming right back home to open up a new homestand next Friday night against the Minnesota Twins. Taking a look at the week gone by, and as it was for much of the month of April, not an easy week, whether it's a homestand, a lefty starter throwing for the other team, the Indians really laboring. And on Monday night, it was Kansas City defeating the Tribe by a score of 6-2, and they backed it up with an 11-5 victory on Tuesday night. Indians really laboring toward the tail end of the month of April, but they would at least squeak out a win over the Royals in the series finale on Wednesday night, a night where they unleashed some pretty good offense, and it began with a huge home run off the bat of Jason Kipnis in the third inning.
Now the pitch, swung on, hit high, hit deep to right center. Orlando back at the track, at the wall, gone to the bullpen. A three-run home run to right center, and Jason Kipnis showed bunt early and then pounded his first home run out of here. And the Indians have a 3-2 lead. And that's what Kipnis gives you at the top of the order. Much like a Grady Sizemore back in the day, the ability to go deep. And a huge three-run home run for Kipnis to right center. And the Indians have a 3-2 lead here in the third.
Well, the Royals came back and took a brief lead, only to see the Indians tie it in the sixth, thanks to their catcher, Roberto Perez.
Here's the set. Here's the pitch. Swung and ripped up the alley in left center. It's a base hit. It'll tie the game. Chisenhall scores. Perez going for two, and he's in sliding with a double. Back-to-back doubles to left center as Roberto Perez ties the game at four. on his first double of the year. And Yordano Ventura could not hold the lead for more than a third of an inning.
Michael Bourne would also chip in the sixth inning.
The pitch. Swung on, ripped to right, base hit, down the line and into the corner. Indians take the lead. Perez scores. Bourne hits second, puts the brakes on with a go-ahead double. Boy, what a series for Michael Bourne. His fourth hit, his third RBI. And off the left-hander, he tomahawked one down into the right field corner. And the Indians, with three consecutive doubles, have come right back to take a 5-4 lead on Kansas City here in the sixth.
And then it was Perez again, this time in the eighth inning, to put the game out of reach.
The 2-2. Swung on, hit a ton, deep right field, it's got a chance, gone! What a night for Roberto Perez! And for Perez, a rare opposite field hit as he pummeled one into the seats in right. His third home run. He has a homer, a double, and a single tonight. And the Indians have a 7-4 lead here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
Following the game, Jason Kipnis stopped by and talked about the big win and his key home run.
Congratulations, Jason. And that's what you can bring this club at the top of the order, that ability to change a game with one swing of the bat.
Well, haven't done it in a while, so it was good to finally help the team out. Either way, I wanted to get the job done, whether it was getting them over with the bunt or just advancing the runners in some way or form. I was glad that I got a good pitch that I could kind of get extended on and finally didn't miss it.
And Jason, do you like it up there at the top of the lineup?
You know what? Obviously, I like it a little bit better when I'm swinging it better, because then I can be the player that I want to be. I can set the table. I can get on base, cause some little havoc, stealing bases, and put some pressure on the defense. But it's about having a good at-bat, but at the same time, you're a leadoff for the first inning of the game and then maybe never again. So it's only one at-bat.
Gosh, you hate to get over dramatic, Kip. I know it's still April, but how big a win was this?
We needed this just to calm ourselves down. You obviously didn't get to the start, off to the start that we wanted to. There's a lot of other good teams that haven't got off to the starts they wanted to. We know we're going to get hot. We know we're going to make a run later, and we want it to at least still mean something. We don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot too much right now, so it's our job to keep battling and win what games that we can.
And when you do go through a patch like this, I know in years past Jason Giambi was here to kind of help the team through at times. Who down there during this tough stretch has been someone that can be leaned on a little bit?
It's a good group. It's not just one guy. You got me, Brandt, Kluber, Avilas, Bourne are all good guys that are vocal in the locker room. You walk that fine line, because even when yourself, if you're struggling, you're kind of a little bit more quiet, but you just can't be, because you know the team's looking at you, and you need to be still vocal, need to be upbeat about what's going on, because people follow your lead. So it's a little tough sometimes.
Well, heck of a win tonight and a heck of a ball game by you, Jace. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
On Thursday, a new opponent, Toronto, came to town to open up a four-game series, and the Jays defeated the Tribe by a score of 5-1. But on Friday night, the Indians bounced back in a big way with a 9-4 victory over the Jays. Again, it was Jason Kipnis with a key home run early.
Here's the wind. Here's the 2-2. Swung on, hit a ton. Deep right field. It is gone! Jason Kipnis with a leadoff home run has tied this game at 1.
That first inning home run tied the game at 1. And then in the third inning, the Indians trailing once again, this time by a score of 4-1. Brandon Moss continued his hot stretch at the plate.
A swing and a liner to right near the line. It gets down. Fair ball! Bounces into the corner for extra bases. Avila scores. Brantley scores. Santana stopped at third. And Moss into second with a big two-run double. A terrific at-bat for Brandon Moss, who now has a team-high 16 runs batted in. And the Indians are right back into this game, trailing it by a score of 4-3.
The Indians ended up tying the game in the third, and then Michael Brantley would put the Tribe in front for the first time. The 2-0. Swung on, and there's a high fly ball, right center field, headed to the gap, and then some. It's gone! Home run, Michael Brantley! The Indians take the lead, It's 6-4 Tribe. So that first home run on the season by Brantley was a game changer for the Indians. Meanwhile, Carlos Carrasco had an up and down outing, but in the fifth inning he was trying to end things, and he got the job done with the pitcher's best friend. Here's the 0-2. Swung on, ground ball left side, snared by Chisenhall to second for one. Kipnis to first. In time! Double play! Oh, what a double play by Chisenhall first, then Kipnis on the relay. Then in the bottom half of the fifth inning, backup catcher Brett Hayes came up big. Here's the 0-1. Swung on, and there's a high fly ball to left. Way back, and it's gone! Home run, Brett Hayes. It's a three-run shot, and the Indians now lead it 9-4. And following the ball game, Hayes stopped by to talk about his and the team's big night.
Brett, you've already equaled a career best two home runs in a season, but tonight what was really huge was the fact that was a game breaker, something this club has really been looking for. Congratulations.
Let's just say we're happy it's May. April was a little tough for us, but we battled, and we're going to continue to battle, and we came out tonight and swung the bats really well, and it's a good team win.
And Brett, I know talking to you at the end of the spring, you were really happy with how things went this spring. You didn't make the club out of camp, but you've managed to kind of keep it going a little bit here since you returned. And what's been the key for you to be able to do that?
Having a good routine. Coming out of camp, you never know when your name's going to be called. It's just so happened to be early. I just got to be ready every day, doing my routine, getting the cage with, our guys, and, being on the same page with our pitchers and catching their bullpens and, almost like pretending like you're playing every day.
Brett, you probably know best when it comes to these kind of starts. I mean, Kansas City didn't get off to this kind of a start last season, but they were kind of muddling around, if you want to use a word. You were with that club. You got a championship ring the other day, but you guys were 50-50. How does a ball club handle this? How do you guys keep from maybe panicking or doing something that gets you out of the norm?
Well, I'll tell you what, you guys put it mildly when you said a rough start. I mean, it was almost like we had 4 months of tough baseball. Like you said, we were 50-50. We came together and had a meeting in late July, and something clicked, and we went off, and obviously you saw what happened last year. So if anything, we just can't panic. This is a 162 games. I know it was a tough month. But we got to come out and play every day. Maybe we'll get on a run. That's what we're kind of hoping for. And, you just take it one day at a time.
And having had that perspective with Kansas City a year ago, what do you like about this club that indicates that there could be some good things coming?
Well, our pitching is, lights out from top to bottom. I know our bullpen has caught, a little bit of a tough spot. But, hey, I mean, so have our hitters. That being said, we have the talent to do some things. And, like I said, you just got to take it one day at a time and get your work in and know that it'll start coming around. And, we're starting to hit the ball a little better. Obviously, our pitching is starting to be a little better. We got a battle. This is the big leagues. Everyone's coming out trying to win and play hard. And, it's just like us.
Brett, have you ever gone through a season where every hit you had was a home run? I mean,
well, I hope not, but or I hope so. So we'll see what happens.
Hey, great job tonight again, Brett. You took advantage of an opportunity. It was interesting because Tito said before the game, look, Burley has such great changeups that I think Brett's a good match here because of his patience and whatnot. And you had good at-bats tonight besides just that home run.
Yeah, Mark, he's a guy that's going to – he picks, he rides it in, he, changeups down the way, he stays on both sides of the plate. Doesn't get into too many patterns. So you got to just pick one side of the play with him and hope he leaves one up. And, I put together a couple of good at-bats, and I think that's what led to my third at-bat being so good because I had a good approach those first two.
Well, great job, Brett. We appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So that's the week gone by, heading into Saturday's game against the Blue Jays at Progressive Field. Again, the Blue Jays in town through Sunday, and then the Indians hit the road once again just for a short stretch, a three-game series against Kansas City next week. That's a look at your week gone by. Stay with us when we come back. It's the Farm Report with Indians Director of Player Development, Carter Hawkins. That's next on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to have you with us as we talk baseball for the next hour or so. And each week on Tribe Talk, we visit with Carter Hawkins, who's the Indians' farm director, new to the position this season, but he's been in the department for quite some time, working closely with former farm director Ross Atkins, who's now in a different role in the Indians' front office. This week, we talked to Carter about the AA Akron Rubber Ducks, just a couple of steps away from the major leagues, some good prospects there, and we began with Cody Anderson, a starting pitcher who has made his way up through the Indians' farm system 2 years ago, was one of the top pitchers in the minor leagues and the Indians' Pitcher of the Year. Last year, a step back, but now this season, a good start for Anderson, who was named the Eastern League's Pitcher of the Week for making two starts in which he was just superb. And we talked to Carter about the progress that Anderson has made in this bounce-back campaign for him.
Yeah, Rosie, Cody's been really impressive. Just had a very strong offseason. You know, where he worked a lot on his mobility, worked a lot on getting himself in positions where he could actually use some of the strength that he has, and his velocity has increased, his breaking ball has gotten better, his changeup has gotten better, and it's been really encouraging for us to see him put that work in and then have some results early on here. So excited about where he is and really excited about where he's going.
And when you look at numbers, at his record 2-1, his ERA 1.13, but is it the walks to strikeouts that really is things that you focus on when you look at development of a pitcher?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we try to figure out what can the pitcher control, you know, and so infield defense and his outfield defense and, you know, kind of where some of those little looping line drives fall, sometimes out of their control. But what is in control is their ability to throw strikes, their ability to miss bats, their ability to keep the ball in the ballpark. So if those guys can do that and do that consistently, we know that that's a good predictor of success at the next level.
And for him, with the difficult season a year ago and then figuring some things out and making that next step, how important is it to get that done at the minor league level before they ever reach the major leagues in a lot of cases?
Yeah, I mean, as we've seen, it's really difficult for guys to make adjustments at the big leagues. Now, that can happen, and it does happen, and we see guys get better at that level for sure, but, you know, it's a lot easier to face those failures in the minor leagues and to take some of those risks in the minor leagues where, you know, you're not on SportsCenter when you make a mistake. So, you know, we're excited that Cody was willing to take some of those risks, and hopefully some of the guys on that in our organization and on that team see that and, you know, and continue to make some strides as well.
And you look at him as part of a nice rotation shaping up with the AA Akron club, and some of the others are off to good starts as expected?
Absolutely. I mean, that rotation was one that we were really excited about going into the season, and you got, you know, Will Roberts and Mike Clevenger and Cody and Ryan Merritt, who's on the 40-man roster along with Cody, and Sean Morimondo, who's been a guy that's, you know, really anchored some of our staffs over the last couple of years, and they've just really come out of the gates firing.
In the bullpen, an interesting name. We saw him a little bit in spring training. A couple of years back was in the winter development program, real hard thrower in Trey Haley. He's getting along in his career now, and I know he's had some ups and downs, but what are you seeing so far this year?
Trey's an interesting case. So Trey, we drafted in 2008. He was our second pick right after Lonnie Chisenhall, and, you know, we knew he had a power arm and a power breaking ball at the time, and, you know, Trey, you know, hasn't had the consistency over the last 7 years, but he's still really young. You know, we got him at 17 years old, and he's only 25 years old now, so, you know, the fact that he still throws hard, he's up 97, 98. He's got a well above average breaking ball that he's not afraid to use in any count. And as he's starting to put some consistency together with those pitches, you know, you start seeing a potential major league arm there. So we're still excited about the potential of Trey being a guy that can impact our major league team. And, you know, he's really in the first part of April here showing us that there's a good shot of that happening.
I know we hear Terry Francona talk so much about patience with pitchers who have good arms at the major league level, and we've seen it with Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar early this season. Just as important in the minor leagues, I'm sure it seems like a long time for you, a long time for him as well, but with Haley's case, very important patience.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you know, we just continue to grind away and continue to try to find solutions and help players to develop, and, you know, we can't force a timeline for a player, and, you know, Trey's been a little bit slower at this point, but that's okay because he's gotten better every year. And if a guy gets better every year and you know, continues to improve, he's going to help us in the major leagues at some point. So, you know, we're pretty excited about the focus and the commitment that he's given us. And, you know, we're hopeful that it can turn into some performance at the major league level at some point.
Carter Hawkins joining us, Indians farm director. We're talking Double A Akron this week, and on the position player front, a player that we saw quite a bit of during Major League spring training is Eric Gonzalez, and he's got that everyday playing time at Double A. And how's he gotten off to the start this season?
Gonzo started off a little bit slow offensively, but over the last week he's, you know, kind of coming to his own. You know, he's a guy that we feel like, you know, certainly could compete at the Triple A level. You know, has competed extremely well in the Dominican Winter League. You know, had a great year last year the second half when he was in Double A. So, you know, feel like he's a guy that could handle that, but we want him to play shortstop every day as well. And then the shortstop at bats right now are in Akron, and you know, he's an elite defender. He can be an elite defender. He continues to improve in that area and continues to improve offensively as well. So, really excited about his potential to help impact our team here at some point as well.
And you mentioned at-bats being available, and we were talking earlier about outfielder Anthony Gallis, who had a very good season a year ago. Great story in terms of where he's been and where he's trying to get to. But is that the case for him this year? The at-bats are at Double-A, so that's where he starts?
Of course, yeah. I mean, guys can't get better if they're not playing. So, you know, we can stick a guy in Triple-A and say, hey, you're a level above. But if he's not playing, he's not getting any better, and that really doesn't serve anybody. So, you know, Anthony's a guy that, you know, he had a great offseason this year as well in Venezuela. Was, you know, kind of a cult hero down there, you know, carrying the lineup that he was on. And, you know, he certainly can handle Columbus as well. But, you know, the ability for him to play every single day in Double-A, you know, is going to serve him better long-term and give us a better shot to have him impact our Major League team at some point as well.
And one more player that we saw quite a bit of in Major League spring training is Jordan Smith. And what have you seen from him in a repeat year for him at Double-A?
It's been exciting to see Jordan really impact the baseball a little bit more. He's a big, strong kid that, you know, you would look at him and say, hey, that guy's, you know, kind of the Joe Mauer type mold that's going to drive the ball to the gaps. And, you know, while he's always hit, he hasn't hit for as much power. And, you know, he's really starting to get into his legs a little bit more, really starting to find the timing where he can drive the ball. And, you know, it's exciting to see that progress, and kind of exciting to see that light bulb go off for him. He's always been an outstanding defender. He can play center field. He can play right field. He just has a great feel for it out there. And now coupling that with, you know, an aggressive, advanced approach at the plate, you know, there's some pretty good potential there.
All right, Carter. Good stuff as always. Thanks so much for coming by. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rosie. Appreciate you having me.
That's Indians Director of Player Development, Carter Hawkins. Stay with us. When we come back, we will visit with a former Tribe first baseman outfielder who played for the Indians back in the 80s and knows all about jinxes thanks to Sports Illustrated covers. Pat Tabler will reveal that there is no such thing as a jinx when we come back on Tribe Talk after this timeout on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where the Indians continue their series against the Toronto Blue Jays. And when the Blue Jays are in town, that means Pat Tabler, a former Cleveland Indian and now a fine television voice for the Toronto Blue Jays, is in town as well. And we caught up with Pat earlier in the series to discuss jinxes. As many fans know, the Indians were on the cover of Sports Illustrated this year, and Sports Illustrated proclaimed proudly that they thought the Indians had a great chance to not only make the playoffs, but go to the World Series and win the World Series. Corey Kluber and Michael Brantley were on the cover, immediately triggering a barrage of, well, concern from fans about the Sports Illustrated cover jinx. The last time the Indians were featured on the cover of Sports Illustrated preseason issue, it was 1987. Corey Snyder, Joe Carter on the cover, and it said the Indians will win the World Series, and they ended up losing 101 games. Well, Pat Tabler was on that team as he joined the Indians back in 1983, was still with the club in 1987, and when we caught up with Pat, we asked him about the jinx and also about that 87 season. Did he think that the Indians were legit as much as Sports Illustrated did, and what was behind their cover appearance?
Let me tell you, Rosie, this is why I think they picked the Indians. There were seven teams in the American League East, and for the six previous seasons, a different team from the American League East had won the division. Each one of them took their turns winning the division. The only guy, or the only team that hadn't won, was the Cleveland Indians in that seven-year period. So they saw all these young position players and some young pitchers coming up, and they said, oh, it must be the Indians' turn. And they said, the Indians are going to win the division. Boy, were they wrong.
Was there a belief, though, in the clubhouse that you could have a big year, or did you realistically look at it and say there's some challenges here?
You know, we knew that the Indians at that time, they were turning the corner. The last couple of years, they had traded away a lot of good young pitchers who were going to become free agents and were not going to sign back there. People like Rick Sutcliffe and Lenny Barker and Burt Blylevin. And in return, they got Joe Carter and they got Mel Hall and they got Brooke Jacoby and they got Brett Butler and Jay Bell and they got all these young players. They traded John Denny in 1982, I believe, or 83, and they got Julio Franco. So, and then with the players coming up from the farm system, Corey Snyder, they said, hey, this is a good nucleus. But we were nowhere near ready to compete against the big boys. And there were some great teams, the Orioles and the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Brewers were outstanding back in that time. The Detroit Tigers were outstanding. So we knew we were good. We were turning the corner, but we were very young and we were a little short on pitching. So when they said the Indians were going to win the World Series, that was great for the fans, and it was great for the city and everything like that. But everybody knew that we were kind of short. Everything had to fall right for us to win the division.
How soon into the season did it take for you to realize that, you know, well, there's still a long way to go?
You know, I can't remember, you know, how we did in April. I can't remember how we did. I just know for the whole season we were bad. I think we lost 100 games, 102. I think we went 60 and 102. So knowing that record, it didn't take long. We were just a little short in certain areas. And, you know, we had a lot of 10 to 9 games. We had a lot of 11 to 8 games, you know, things like that. That's hard to overcome.
And so you fast forward to 2015, and the Indians are on the cover again. As soon as you saw that, did that kind of hit home for you? And not necessarily thinking the same thing would happen, but just the irony of it, or maybe a chuckle inside?
I had to chuckle. I had to laugh, you know, because of what this team this year in 2015, because I think they're still making their way to figure out who they are and where they're going to be. But just the thought, you know, way back when in 1987, that was the last time they were on, that's the last time they picked them, and how that whole year unfolded, and how that's where I got the chuckle and the laugh. Still have great memories of all the great guys and the fun that we had. And I hope this year's team does well. I really do. I like them. I think they've got a lot of good pitchers, and they've got a lot of good young hitters, so it's a long season.
Could there possibly be a jinx from being on the cover of a magazine?
Never. There's no such thing. Only in your heart if you believe it, Rosie. No, I think it should be a lot of fun. It should be a good summer.
Always fun to catch up with Pat Tabler, who had a fine major league career spanning 12 seasons. And along the way, 6 of those years were with the Cleveland Indians, including the infamous 1987 Cleveland Indians, the last team that was on the Sports Illustrated cover. And nice to hear Pat say that don't be concerned about the difficult start. This is a pretty good Indians ball club that could still find its way into the mix by season's end. So we thank him for stopping by, having some fun talking about the Sports Illustrated cover jinx. Stay with us when we come back. More to come after this on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk, our final segment, as we join you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to have you with us this weekend as we talk baseball on the radio. On Thursday, we had a chance to catch up with a couple of members of the Cleveland Indians this week with some interesting interviews. Danny Salazar, Tribe starting pitcher, who pitched so well on Wednesday against the Kansas City Royals and got out of there with a win. And he's been a real nice story so far this season. Salazar, after being sent to AAA Columbus late in spring training, was not there long. There was a need in the rotation, and he has come back with a vengeance and thrown the ball extremely well with 3 wins and 3 starts. And we caught up with him prior to his start against Kansas City and talked to him about what it has taken so far for him to throw the ball well and why he feels he's had such good success early in his stints with the Indians this season.
Right now I feel pretty good. You know, I think the work that I've been doing now is showing up, you know, like more like the consistency that I have right now with my routine and all those little things that I needed to work on, you know, are things that are showing up right now.
And I know you went to Goodyear very early and really worked hard in terms of conditioning and things like that. Is that coming into play too now, or is it something that you don't think about too much?
I mean, that is coming in too, because, you know, like right now, like the last game, they let me go 115 pitches, something like that. And I felt pretty good, like, when, you know, after that. And sometimes, like, you feel tired, like, every time you get to 100 pitches.
I know that sometimes they say that day after you pitch is maybe the most important in that five-day cycle. And it seems like you've come out here that next day and then you're working hard getting right back after it. Why is that day so important, that first day after you pitch to get things going again?
Because, you know, that's the day, the next day after you pitch, you're going to feel sore. So you got to get here, like, really early, get your treatment done, you know, your conditioning in the weight room. So you can put that shoulder back in place what it was, you know, before the game.
And you have some great examples here, Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco. Do you use them as a resource? And if so, how have they helped?
Yeah, you know, right now, like, next day I'm showing up really early here, you know, and doing, like, everything as soon as possible. Like, I'm trying to be done before we have to come out here and stretch, like an hour before that.
Danny Salazar joining us. And, Danny, you had the setback in spring training where you're sent to AAA, and for a lot of players that's not easy. But it seemed like you approached it in the right way. And what were your thoughts when you were told you were not going to start the season with the big club, and how did you handle that?
I mean, it was a little bit tough, you know. You get a little bit disappointed at yourself, you know, because, you know, like, you could have done a better job, you know, to stay there. But, I mean, they sent me down. I didn't think about that too much, you know, if not about working hard again and trying to get back up as soon as possible.
Big difference from what you were doing in the spring to what you're doing now, or just a little bit that can sometimes make a difference?
I think it's a big difference, you know. My routine right now is more consistent. I think I'm working, I've been doing, like, the same effort, you know, pretty good effort, but better routine right now.
That's Tribe starting pitcher Danny Salazar talking about the success that he has had so far in that continuing search for consistency and his efforts to keep it rolling on the mound for the Indians. And oftentimes he's throwing to Roberto Perez, who has had the tough task of filling in for Yan Gomes, the Indians' silver slugger catcher and a fine defensive catcher as well, who has been on the shelf with the knee injury and is expected to be so for probably another month or so. But Perez has had his ups and downs at the plate, had a big game for the Indians on Wednesday night in the victory over Kansas City with three hits and his third home run on the season. And we talked to him about pressing in trying to do well when replacing a star player and what he's tried to do to alleviate some of that pressure and have success like he did on Wednesday night.
Last night, you know, ball game, you know, I was, I think I was for 0-for-18, which I didn't know. But you know what, I came here early and try to work, not try to do too much, you know. Me and Bambo, we had a good game plan. I said, you know what, just go out there, be yourself, and not try to do too much. Put the ball in play, and it works out last night. I didn't try to do too much, try to put the ball in play, and I got three hits. So I think I had four quality ABs, and I was happy with it.
It sounds simple. Don't try and do too much. But the situation you're in, you're in there for Yan Gomes, is a very good catcher, and does that come into play where sometimes you can put a little too much pressure on yourself to do more?
Yes, especially, you know, Yan Gomes, a silver slugger award, you know. But you know what? We're different players. You know, I'm just here to help the team win if they in any way. But you know what? Previous last game, I was pretty much doing, you know, what I'm not supposed to do. You know, try to do too much at the plate, and that's not part of my game. My game is, you know, try to call a good game and get good ABs, you know. And that's what yesterday I did. You know, I stayed within myself. I trusted myself yesterday, and I had a good game.
And you mentioned doing the other things, and maybe even more important than the home run and the three hits, some of the things you talked about with Danny Salazar after that first inning. Explain what you saw and how you changed things to help him get going.
You know what? Kansas City is a really good team. You know, they swing the bat pretty good. They're very aggressive. So, you know, first inning he was leaving the ball up a little bit. He wasn't making pitches. And so I got to the dugout and I said, you know what? They scored 2 runs. That's all they're going to get. You know, but we got to pitch backwards, you know. I think they're going to try to get to your fastball, which is understandable because he's a hard-throwing pitcher, so they're going to look for the fastball. But you know what? He has a developed curveball, and, you know, he had a good split-finger changeup. And that's what we did, you know. We started soft early after first inning and hard late, and it was working. Except, you know, he made a mistake on Hosmer, but other than that, he threw the ball well.
And it seems like that you two have a good relationship out there and have worked well together in the past. How quickly has that developed for you with him where you can have the confidence to make some changes if need be?
You know, I think that comes from the minor leagues. You know, when you catch a guy pretty much, you know, all his starts down in the minor leagues, since 2011, you know, you get comfortable with that guy. You know, being behind the plate for him, it's huge because I know what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. So it makes it good for him, and he really feels comfortable with me back there. And we just gotta always we're talking. We're the night before he's pitching. We always sit down and talk about, you know, the lineup. So that's pretty much it. You know, he likes to work and I like to work too, so that makes it interesting.
And in closing, preparation is such a big part of this game, and I know you prepared very well in spring training. How much has that helped you now that you've gotten this opportunity to play just about every day?
It helped me a lot. It comes from the off season. You know, I had a really good off season, and then when I got to spring training, you know, they right away, you know, the first meeting, Tito told me, you know what, just prepare, you're going to play every day. You know, you never happen, you're injury away from playing every day. I just want you to be ready, you know, and that's what I did. You know, in spring training, I worked like I was playing every day. I prepared like I was going to play every day, and nothing changed, you know. You don't want to see, you know, John going down, but I think I was ready for it, and hopefully, you know, I keep taking advantage of it too.
That's Roberto Perez. Always a fun interview, and he's been hammering away trying to get things squared away to where he can produce, have success, and not worry so much about who he's replacing, but just play his own game. And the Indians certainly feel that his own game is good enough to be successful behind the plate at the major league level. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Tribe Talk. Great to have you with us this week. And we will join you next week from right here at Progressive Field as the Indians will return home Friday night to take on the Minnesota Twins and open up a new homestand. So we'll join you from Cleveland next weekend on Tribe Talk. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
Been listening to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.